Money FM 89.3, best of workday afternoon. Market View on Money FM 89.3.
Good afternoon and welcome to Market View Wrap on Money FM 89.3. I'm Clarissa Montero for the workday afternoon, joined in the studio by finance presenter JP Ong and on the phone by Mr. Jeff Howie from the SGX. Hello, Jeff.
Good afternoon, Clarissa. Hi, JP.
Hey, how's it going?
It's a decent day in the green today.
Mm-hmm. That is true.
We've had a few of those.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, steady gains. It's all steady today. I guess the three leaders across Asia, taking right over from you, JP.
No, it's all right. It's all right. My Wi-Fi is still searching for a signal
now.
Oh, cool.
But yeah, look, you are absolutely right. Markets are still in the green so far today and extending gains. We're up by 16 points for the SGX. 2,652 is where we sit at the moment. The thing that we're watching out for right now is also value turnover and total trades. So trading activity is still a little bit thinner than we've seen in recent times. But if you compare it to, say, this same period last year before the COVID-19 pandemic hit also, you might even say it's not really that far off. But nevertheless, it's about 413 million Singapore dollars in total trades changing hands. Over here in Singapore, 217 stocks in the green, 142 so far in the red. And by all accounts, markets across the region are also cautiously moving higher today. The Nikkei 225 is up by about 32 points. The ASX 200, talk about a flatness. They're up by just about half a point down in Sydney. Shanghai and Shenzhen up by about 0.8% each. The Hang Seng also trading about 123 points higher. So despite all of this political uncertainty that's now gripped Hong Kong, the Hang Seng has actually held its own up pretty well. The Hong Kong benchmark now at 25,262 points. The South Korean Kospi also trading about 0.4% in the green. So it seems that markets are trying to at least try again to make this balancing act between the resurgence of COVID-19 cases in various areas around the world and also a possible economic recovery. So the latter part, or the relentless optimists out there, got another reason to at least move their bullish case forward when the U.S. reported a pretty decent set of macro data, especially jobs data, which actually a significant amount of jobs actually added overnight and actually beat expectations. That drew a fist bump from U.S. President Donald Trump. It's at least fueling this belief that that regardless, the economy is going to continue to recover despite the rise of COVID-19 cases. But as we know, the coronavirus is rearing its ugly head yet again across major areas of the United States. I believe it was 51,000 cases overnight that was reported. Even down in Australia, Melbourne continues, or the state of Victoria continues to try and weather this latest boxing round, at least with this particular virus. But so far, at least, the markets are keeping their exuberance a little bit in check today, but still all moving up cautiously, that is.
Jeff, it has been numbers above the 2,600-point mark for pretty much all of this week, which is good for us. We like to see that. How much of that had to do with the numbers, the purchasing manager index numbers that came out from China?
Not a lot. I guess that has driven the outperformance today. So as JP said, we're in the green across the entire region today, with Australia just right at the bottom there, but nonetheless having a small gain. Now, China, CSI 300 is the strongest, as is Taiwan, but then we are the third strongest. So we're the third strongest in Asia and Singapore today. Now, what's driving that, and throughout the course of the week, as you said, is our two big heavyweight sectors have actually performed and been amongst our strongest stocks this week. And that hasn't been the case for all of the first half of 2020. So a lot of stock markets across the world are very similar in the first half of 2020. The difference was in the detail. The difference was in the actual sectors that make up the indices. For instance, as we know, S&P 500 was really strong and a lot of people are questioning, well, why is the S&P 500 so strong? It's because 40%, more than 40% of that index is made up of technology stocks as well as healthcare stocks, in particular healthcare equipment and services and internet enterprises. So that's what drove the S&P 500. Now, in Singapore, we had the same thing. You look at our most traded stocks and the 20 most traded stocks that were the most defensive, that was also very heavy in the terms of healthcare, medical equipment, as well as some medical supplies and technology in data centers and businesses supporting the ICT sectors. So that's what we saw in the first half. Now, the problem was in the first half, you look across all the sectors in the world and you see that banking stocks and real estate stocks were amongst the weakest. So you look at the top quartile stocks of all, the top quartile of all banks listed across the world, and you take that top quartile by market value, then you can see that those banks all averaged a decline of 21%. And then you look at the real estate stocks as well across the world, the median decline of the top quartile of real estate stocks by market value were down 16%. Lo and behold, in the first half of 2020, the STI and the FTSE ASEAN All Share Index, representing the ASEAN region, they were anchored, their returns, between that decline of 21% and the decline of 16%. So what's happened this week, which is different to the first half, is the banks and the real estate developers have really driven the returns of the STI, which has put us right in the, as we said, the top three today, and made the STI very competitive across the region.
So it's looking like real estate is back in the interest levels of a lot of people.
I think it is back in the interest of many folks, especially because of the reopening of certain economies. A lot of property values have been hammered because of the because of the lack of economic activity. It's really affected a lot of the commercial space as well. But you are seeing, take for example Singapore. We're in the midst of phase two of the reopening of the economy. Mm-hmm. So far, not touch wood. You know, there haven't been these major snags yet that we've seen in other economies around the world, and they are hopeful that this is going to support a possible recovery for some of these very beleaguered shop owners, F&B outlets out here also, and eventually also help some of the REITs. I did want to also raise that with just to tag on what Jeff actually brought up right now. I'm looking at the top performers on the STI as of yesterday, and this is the most I could get right now. And the top three that you're seeing here are not just REITs, but they're also REITs in this industrial and logistics space. So Mapletree Logistics Trust, I believe, and Jeff, you could correct me on this. You might have more updated numbers here. Mapletree Logistics Trust up by about 13.7%. You've got Mapletree Industrial Trust up by more than 12%. And Ascendus Real Estate, which also has a significant exposure to industrial also, they're up by about 8.5% year to date. And you can see the theme there, right? Logistics, industrial. So again, when people, you know, when folks talk about REITs actually benefiting in this environment, not so much because of the economic recovery, but because the yields of REITs are still vis-a-vis more attractive than what you compare them, when you compare them to overall interest rates. But the big question is which REITs are going to get affected most and which REITs are going to be shielded, will prove more sturdy in this downturn or this prolonged uncertainty. And it seems that just judging by this, it seems that the clear winners are industrials and logistics. Jeff, I don't know if the numbers are correct. If you could get, if I'm far off.
No, yeah. I can add to that in that, I often maintain we now at that level where we are providing a global platform for our REIT market here in Singapore, and we as a testament to that, if you look at the so across the world, there's 800 REITs or so listed all around the world, mostly in the US. Now you break that down to the top 150 or so that the REITs that have a market value or a market capitalization above 3 billion Singapore dollars. So we look at the leaders. And if you look at the 20 strongest performance in the 2020 year through to this week, of those larger REITs, those 150, 160 largest REITs, four of our REITs are in there, in that top 20. And they are, as you just said, JP, they're Mapletree Industrial Trust, they're Mapletree Logistics Trust, and it's Ascendus REIT. Mm-hmm. Now, from Mapletree Industrial Trust, for Keppel DC REIT and Ascendus REIT, one thing that does tie those three REITs together is they all do have varied exposure to data centres. So Mapletree Industrial Trust as well, which joined the STI, 22nd of June. It you saw its private placement to it's increasing its portfolio exposure in data centres from 32% up to 39%, bringing its total exposure to high-tech buildings, which includes those data centres, from 55% to 60%. Keppel DC REIT, it's a pure-play data centre stock. It was the first one to list in Asia. It was our strongest REIT last year, and it's been our strongest REIT this year. And then Ascendus REIT also does have some exposure. High specs industrial and data centres make up 17% of its portfolio. And if you when you look in the financial slides, it notes that its ICT customers contribute around 9%, with data centres contributing around 5% to its monthly gross revenue. So these are stocks that I guess had that exposure to those internet enterprises, those cloud providers, those ICT type of digital businesses that have had to basically boost their businesses in the advent of COVID-19.
And just to not be left out, SBH entering the data center space as well.
That is correct. Well, it is a joint venture alongside Keppel Corporation. And as we mentioned, SBH is going to be providing, or Singapore Press Holdings will be providing, a very important component, which is the land where you're going to build some of these data centers in also. A 60-40 split in that JV also. And it's just going to show that this is going to be something that will still be a significant driver, especially if industries coming out of the COVID-19 pandemic change permanently towards more work from home, towards more data-driven and more emphasis on making sure you have secure and reliable connectivity and data storage. These data centers are going to be very important. Mind you, this will also bleed into the semiconductor space. The theme last year was also the downturn in the cycle for the semiconductor industry. Well, it seems to have not just bottomed out of that particular cycle, but now there's a new flavor that's really boosting it also, and that's data centers. Because guess what? Data centers also need logic chips, just a different kind of chip per se, but nevertheless, there is that demand that could actually benefit things.
And that's where AEM comes in.
And that's where AEM comes in. That's where the likes of UMS, for instance, come in. And some of these other folks in the semiconductor and microchip sector that are based here in Singapore, because we are also very much integrated in this particular space.
You know, I just came back from, this is my first week back after 2 weeks of being on vacation, staying at home. But it was interesting because midweek this week, Sixth Sense Hotels announced that they were pulling out of Singapore. Mm-hmm. Now, that had to raise the question for me, how are the hospitality REITs doing now? Are they still, you know, facing huge headwinds? Are they starting to pare back some of the challenges? What are they looking like in the start of the second half of the year?
Well, let's pull that up actually in the REIT space, actually the H trusts, and we're seeing they're at CDL H Trust today at least, and I can talk about how they're doing today. CDL H Trust is hospitality trust is flat at about $1.05 a piece. Far East Hospitality Trust is trading about 1% in the red today at 52 Singapore cents per unit. And Frasers Hospitality Trust also trading about 2.1% in the red. Look, it's anybody's the outlook, at least for this particular sector, remains rather unclear, because yes, we have seen the easing of circuit breaker measures, but a lot of this will also depend on whether or not tourism and leisure activities are going to be resumed
globally,
to resume.
We're starting to open some of those borders.
Yes, but again,
Jeff, can you go home yet?
No. I think he can go home, but can he come back here?
Can
is that
he
the
come
question?
Back?
Right,
but if you look at the chart of CDL Hospitality Trust, it's like an ECG of where we've all been. You know, back in mid March, back on that major low on the 23rd of March, we weren't in a great place, but we have made some inroads into obviously moving into phase two and so forth, slow gradual progress. So if you look at that unit price, and JP said it was $1.05 at the moment, that got down to as much as 63.5 cents a unit. Mm-hmm. So it's currently up more than 60%. And I do remember in early June when we did kick off June, maybe we did overshoot a bit. And I remember discussing that with both you and Clarissa, JP, before Clarissa's break. And we're talking about a little bit of overshooting there. That got to just above $1.20 a unit as well. So the unit price has actually gradually seen a decent recovery.
Yeah, and also
partial recovery.
Yeah, and I will. And it's also fair to point out that yes, it has come back down from its mid-June peak, but then it hasn't really gone all the way down to the March bottom. Also, it seems that they're capping at least some of the downside for some of these hospitality trusts, at least for CDL Hospitality's mm-hmm. point. And it could also be partly due to some of the support that the Singapore government's also extended to this particular sector. There have been some relief measures also right. rolled out to the hotels and hospitality spaces, and they have pointed out also the ones with the stronger and bigger balance sheets might be better equipped to actually weather this particular storm and uncertainty. CDL Hospitality Trust has a pretty solid balance sheet. I can't say the same though for some others that may have decided to exit also. So you're going to see a bit of a shakeup also in this particular sector. But now the question is, have you stored enough to last this very long with this potentially longer winter that's facing them?
Because it's so intrinsically tied, hospitality and tourism, and then that brings us to Singapore Airlines.
Yes, of course. And Singapore Airlines today, I mean, the other day they actually announced that they were going to store 4 more jumbo aircraft, mm-hmm. 2 Airbuses and 2 Boeing 787s, I believe, out in Alice Springs in Australia. They have decided to do that because, again, more than 90% of the fleet remains grounded, and they're going to need to perform maintenance in actual secure locations. So they have decided to ground that particular space. I think what we're going to be watching out for is whether or not travel bubbles can actually start to form. But as we've seen, I mean, we take the for instance the example of Australia and New Zealand, who were coming closer to forming a potential travel bubble. Well, that's been called into question also because of the resurgence of cases that we've seen in the state of Victoria there. Well, what will that also
mean for? It hasn't been that many, you know. I don't actually understand why the reaction is as it is.
Well, I think it's also because of how unpredictable the virus has been, and especially with its spread and its trajectory. I think erring on the side of caution might have been for the better, at least. And I can't speak for Australians. Perhaps Jeff, you can.
Wear face masks. That's all I've got to say. 3 words. Put on a face. Well, 4 words. Put on a face mask. That's what I think is now going to be mandatory. Well, at least in those most affected suburbs in Victoria. But unfortunately, the trend of face masks hasn't been so prevalent in other countries as it has in Singapore.
Because they haven't made them cute enough.
Well, you know what's really interesting about face masks, though? There was a very interesting study that Goldman Sachs did about face masks and the United States economy. They were actually saying, okay, if you don't want to go into a lockdown, maybe making face masks mandatory is a good third road. And they actually did a study, and according to their econometric models, if you don't wear a face mask, the American economy stands a chance of contracting by 17.5%. But if you start to wear a face mask and make it mandatory when you go out, you might cut that potential downside down to just 7.5%. So you can see it's not just a positive for public
like
health, but also an economic issue. I did not know you were from a red state, by the way.
You know, I'm from a swing state. Sometimes it's red, sometimes it's blue. I don't even know what it is this week.
It's Friday. Which
they don't know what they are this
no.
week. Yeah. No, but I think travel, that bubble that he's talking about, and Jeff, I think this one's important to you and to me as well, because I'd like to get to Australia. I'd like Victoria to sort things out so that I can go visit my son.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And I know our Australian Consul General here, he works very hard building business ties between Singapore and Australia. So we all want those bridges and those gates open.
I think we all need them. And perhaps Singapore needs them just a tad more than Australia. That's not that Australia doesn't need them open.
Yeah, it's also because we're such an open economy as well. And
yes.
You know, the sooner we can get back to more flexible or more liberal travel arrangements, then the sooner then it might matter a little bit more, I think, to a more open economy like Singapore. But you know, it'll matter to everybody pretty much.
Jeff, how long have you been here in Singapore?
11 years now.
All right, then you can answer this question for me before we let you go and end Market View Wrap.
There's a prize at the end, Jeff.
Stop scaring the man, will you? Elections are coming up next week, right? Polling day being at the end of the week. I'm just curious, by market trend historically, what does the week before polling day look like on the exchange?
It's, I look, it, it it's not, I mean, you price into, I've got to be really super careful what I say. No, markets love stability, stable governments, majority governments, markets love that across the world. That's in the textbooks. It's theory. It's obvious. And they can, when you don't have that stability or you have those concerns, you saw what happened in 2016 in the US election. You saw what happened with Brexit and so forth. So, you know, markets don't like uncertainty. They like stability. There's not much more to say than that.
All right. Well, then it should be a pretty boring week next week.
It goes back also to what we were saying, that perhaps traders are also maybe just keeping their cards close to their chest until we get to the end of the election. Now, markets prefer stability. Jeff is right. And when you look across the ASEAN region, I think it's safe to say that you can't get more stable than Singapore vis-a-vis some of our neighbors. Regardless of that, there is always a chance in an election that something could change. There could be a surprise. That's what they're
bite
for
your
there.
Tongue, JP.
Well, I mean, I'm just saying.
As the Singaporean on this conversation, bite your tongue.
No, but
JP.
I'm just saying, and I think this is what markets are at least just trying to at least account for, just the potential or the space
true.
For that also. So maybe now is not the time to make any wild bets. Maybe now is not the time to perhaps go out there and be cavalier in the markets. Perhaps now is the time to just be a little bit to just be a little bit more careful, a little bit more conservative when you move, until at least we get to the exit polls.
All right. This has been Market View Wrap on Money FM 89.3. I'm Clarissa Montero, joined by finance presenter JP Ng. And always on Fridays, as always I say, unless he has something better to do, Jeff Howie from the SGX.
Good to have you back, Jeff.
You guys have a great weekend.
Thank you.
You're on Money FM 89.3.
Before acting on the information on Money FM, please consider if it's suitable for your own investment objectives, financial situation, and risk tolerance. To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at moneyfm893.sg or download the SBH radio app available on Google Play or the App Store.